Hello and welcome to this special Big Boat interview. My name is Lucy Dunn and I'm the Acting Features Director of Boat. Today we have the privilege of talking to one of the most influential conservation photographers of our time, Christina Mittermeier, who has dedicated her life to protecting the world's oceans. Christina has also worked in more than 130 countries, sailing to remote corners on her boat, an 18-metre sailing catamaran called Sea Legacy 1, which she describes as very special. In 2005, she coined the phrase conservation photography, as she felt photographers working on environmental issues needed their own platform. In 2014, she co-founded Sea Legacy. This unique foundation tackles marine health in a very unique way. It acts like a big global marketing, education and communication agency because, as she'll explain later, the sea is not a big corporation like Coca-Cola and needs help to spread the message. Christina's work has been published in hundreds of prestigious magazines, including National Geographic and Time magazine. And she also has many prestigious awards to her name, including the Smithsonian Conservation Photographer of the Year Award and the Imaging Award for Photographers Who Give Back. Additionally, she is also the first female photographer to reach 1 million followers on Instagram. So Christina, lovely to meet you.
It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
So Tell me, where did your love of the oceans come from? Why did you choose oceans as your subject?
You know, I never think about it as a choice, because all you have to do is look at a globe, a representation of our planet, to see that the ocean is the largest ecosystem on this spaceship that's carrying us across the universe. So it stands to reason that it's probably the most important one as well. So it's not a choice. We have to take care of the ocean. It's the ecosystem that keeps us alive.
And did you grow up next to the sea?
No, I grew up in the mountains of central Mexico, but it doesn't matter where we live. The ocean touches everything on this planet. It moderates weather patterns, currents, the climate of planet Earth. So we all need to care about the ocean. As a child, I just had this dream, this wonder about wildlife in the ocean, and I wanted to swim with dolphins, and I thought that marine biology would be the career that would take me closest to that. But of course, you have to do a lot of science and look through a microscope for years on end. So it was not everything I hoped it was going to be, but it did bring me closer to the ocean.
So when did you first pick up a camera and why?
You know, when I finished my studies, I was thinking that science was the best way, that the best tool I would have to communicate the urgency of understanding the ocean as the engine on planet Earth and conveying the urgency to protect it. Even in the 1980s, as a young student, I could see that industrial fishing has, you know, mined the marine resources of the planet like an inexhaustible source, but it isn't. The biomass of the ocean is really important, to keep the ocean alive and to keep life alive on planet Earth. And at the same time, we all know that we have used the ocean as a dumpster for decades. And so we have taken too much out and we have dumped too much in. And it's imperative that we understand how this engine of planet Earth works so that we can protect it, not just for ourselves, but for the many generations that will come after us. So I thought science was going to be the tool to do that. But scientific language is difficult to understand for most people. So I stumbled upon photography, and it just turned out to be the way to communicate that really engages people. People want to talk about photography. They want to talk about the images. And these images really are an invitation to the conversation, to bring more people into this dialogue.
That's true. That's very true. So you coined the term conservation photography. So can you explain what that means and why and how did you come up with it?
Yes, when I was coming up the ranks of photographers, I was embedded into the discipline known as nature photography. And nature photographers were very preoccupied with, you know, where animals can be found and the kinds of lenses and tools that you can use to photograph wildlife. But very few of them were talking about, you know, conservation and the threats facing biodiversity. And, you know, I could see that a number of photographers were going through extraordinary lengths to use their images to lobby and advocate for protection of the places where they were photographing. And I thought, well, they're not just nature photographers. These guys are doing something more. And, you know, I wanted to be like them. So I thought, we need a new discipline. We need to differentiate ourselves from mere nature photographers. You know, we don't do this just for the joyride of seeing our pictures published. And I thought, you know, conservation photography, it's an actionable discipline. So I'm very proud that today there are thousands of photographers that think of themselves as conservation photographers.
What do you aim to do, and what do you aim to do with your photography? Is it to create emotion, to engage people, to mobilize people?
Well, think about this. So as the largest ecosystem on planet Earth, you would be sure, right, that the attention deserved to protect the ocean and maintain it alive is there, but it isn't. Of all the sustainable development goals, there's 17 that, you know, these enormous group of scientists have pointed out, you know, this is how we keep our planet alive. Sustainable development goal number 14, which is the one that pertains to the ocean, is the most underfunded. The United Nations tells us that it requires an investment of $170 billion a year to do all the kinds of activities that are required, from marine protected areas to building blue economies. Well, at the moment, we only have $25 billion investment. So there's a shortfall of $150 billion, and that needs to come from somewhere. So I want my photographs to create urgency, of course, to build empathy, but more than anything, to tell the world that we need to pay attention. Because if planet Earth was a spaceship and you were to open the engine room, it would be full of salt water. The ocean is what keeps this planet alive.
Okay, so you're gaining support through your pictures and broadcasting your pictures. How do you do that?
I think of myself as a diplomat, as an ocean diplomat. And the organization that I have built with my partner, Sea Legacy, is dedicated to building and engaging different communities to invite people to, you know, to care about the ocean and to understand the ocean as a very important part of our daily lives. So we broadcast our images any way we can. We worked together as National Geographic photographers for many years, and there was a point when I thought that the yellow magazine, National Geographic, was the biggest microphone that a photographer could get. And then along came social media. And now, you know, on Instagram, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, you can reach thousands and thousands of people every day. But I also do a lot of public speaking. And I use that pulpit to tell stories and to remind people that we are citizens of planet Earth, but also to give them actionable things that they can do, because the ocean is also a huge part of the solution to climate change. And we're all concerned about this issue. And, you know, just supporting ocean conservation would solve one quarter of the problem, because 25% of carbon dioxide is absorbed by the ocean. So we kind of need to keep it alive.
Yes, exactly. So tell me a bit more about Sea Legacy. How did you start that? Who did you start with, and how did you come up with the idea?
Yeah, you know, after serving as president of the International League of Conservation Photographers for 7 years, I stepped down to allow other photographers to take a leadership role. And when I was at the ILCP, we were, you know, covering all sorts of issues, from, you know, the ivory trade to climate change to freshwater. And there were very few photographers that were focused solely on the ocean. So when I met my current partner, photographer Paul Nicklin, he too is a marine biologist. And together we thought, you know what, we should start a movement just to shine a light on the importance of the ocean. We started Sea Legacy together in 2014. So we're coming up on our 10th year. 10th anniversary next year.
Congratulations.
And we wanted it to be, you know, not a traditional conservation organization. We really wanted it to be more like a marketing agency for ocean issues, for the heroes that are doing the work of protecting the ocean, and for all the small organizations around the world that are struggling to find the funding they need to protect sharks, to protect sea turtles. I mean, that $150 billion short gap, that's who we're trying to shine a light on.
And what do you mean by marketing agency? So just give me an example of something that you've done.
Yeah, so if the ocean was a company, you know, if the ocean was Coca-Cola or Nike or Adidas, it would have a massive budget for communications and marketing, you know, to toot its own horn about how important it is, but it doesn't. So Sea Legacy plays that role. And we work with many other partners and organizations that do not have the budgets to communicate their own work. So to give you an example, recently, we were asked by the government of Panama, by President Laurentino Cortizo, to come to Panama because he needed public support to expand the marine protections of his country. Well, Sea Legacy came in and we did a massive public campaign on social media, but also on earned media, you know, think of billboards and, you know, airport posters, all of that stuff. Well, Laurentino Cortizo first declared 30% of continental waters in Panama protected. And then he went a step further and he just protected 50% of its exclusive economic zone. It is massive. You know, it's one of the countries with the largest ocean protection. So Sea Legacy plays that role of socializing, communicating, creating engagement and excitement around something like this.
That's clever. It's clever. And what have been Sea Legacy's biggest wins apart from that?
Well, you know, once Panama declared its marine protections, Costa Rica and Colombia and Ecuador wanted to do the same. So Sea Legacy has been working with organizations in all these four countries to create the first interconnected marine protected area. So now when animals that migrate, like sharks or whales or sea turtles, who are protected in a national park in the ocean, when they exit the national park, they don't know it. You know, there's fishing vessels out there. Well, now, thanks to this effort, you know, they can navigate safely from one country to another through these interconnected series of marine protections. And so now we want to take this idea and replicate it in other parts of the world. And we're starting to work in the coast of Australia, thinking about Indonesia, Timor-Leste, and that's another big migratory corridor for whales and sharks.
And then coming down to, you own your own boat, I think. So tell me about it and why you bought it.
Yeah, this is a very important part of our strategy. Sea Legacy is a nonprofit organization in the United States, so we rely on donations. But it would be irresponsible for any organization to use the money that's donated by the people who care about the wildlife to buy a boat. So Paul and I decided to buy the boat on our own. So we own Sea Legacy One, and we charter it on the days that it's on expedition to Sea Legacy as an organization. So Sea Legacy gets to use this vessel at a very discounted rate, and we get to spend as much time as we need at sea. And Paul and I get to live the dream of sailing around the world and being a beacon of hope everywhere we go. So it's amazing. I love Sea Legacy One.
And what kind of boat is it?
It is a very unique type of boat. It's one of a kind, aluminum catamaran. It's a 62-footer. It's a catch rig, and it's phenomenal. It's an ocean-going vessel. It's crossing the Pacific as we speak.
And oh, really? And where have you been on it?
Well, the journey on Sea Legacy One started in the eastern coast of the United States. That's where the boat was when we bought it. And we sailed it to the Bahamas and spent almost a year working in the Bahamas on incredible conservation projects. And then we crossed the Panama Canal and started working with Panama, Costa Rica, Colombia. We spent 3 months in the Galapagos. And then we sailed it to Baja California, to the Gulf of California. And we spent a year working on the conservation of blue whales, on trying to establish marine protections. And just a couple of weeks ago, it started its journey from the coast of Mexico to the Marquesas. So we're going to be in French Polynesia.
And what are you going to be doing there?
We are now establishing the network of conservation organizations we're going to be working with. First, we're going to tell the story of the coral gardeners, because it's a very inspiring story. young people on the island of Morea that saw that the reef was dying. And, you know, they asked adults what was being done about it. And when they saw that nothing was being done, they took matters into their own hands. And Titouan Bernicot, who's the founder of the Coral Gardeners, at 16 established an organization to restore the coral reefs of Morea. So if a 16-year-old in a small island in Polynesia can do it, what's our excuse?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Oh, that sounds exciting. What's that? I mean, photographing the ocean, what's the hardest thing about doing it?
I think of anybody, this audience will understand just how dangerous it is to jump in the ocean, especially when it's big and angry. But, you know, the big currents, just the respect that the ocean commands. It's a brutal master, as we know, and you just have to know what you're doing and have a very well-trained crew and be mindful and careful.
Have you ever felt like you're in danger at all, or no?
Yeah, no, so many times. I mean, there's been a couple of times where I've been, you know, coming up from a dive and the dinghy's not there. You know, I've been carried away by a current. Oh. And I remember floating there thinking, well, this is how it ends then.
Oh, dear. And have you ever come across any angry wildlife that has decided that you might be lunch or...
You know, I think in order to come across angry wildlife, you have to make the wildlife angry.
Yeah, and I try
to be very respectful. And in the ocean, you cannot chase animals because they will outswim you every time. So you have to develop the sixth superpower called patience, and you have to spend a lot of time in the water to allow animals to come close to you, to come and investigate, to be curious, so that you can take their picture. And it takes a long time.
You need a lot of patience.
A lot of patience and a lot of time in the water.
I mean, how do you track? I mean, I've seen obviously Blue Planet, and see that there are, you know, they have big groups of wildlife photographers, and they spend 3 weeks chasing orcas. I mean, and there's only two of you. So how do you swing it? How do you manage it? What's your secret?
You know, Sea Legacy One, that's the key, because it allows us to be on location for as long as we need. And so when you find a place where there's congregations of fish, you know, so bait bowls are forming, you can spend a lot of time out there just waiting and observing and watching. And, you know, you find your opportunity to get in the water and capture those moments. But if you had to, you know, charter a boat, or there's a lot of very well-intentioned boat owners who have offered their boats to us. But they're always on a schedule. You know, the captain always has an agenda. And so just when things are getting good, the captain will say, oh, it's time to go. We have to move the boat. Well, not for Sea Legacy One. We can stay as long as it's needed. It's a sailboat, so it uses very little fuel. And we are very self-sufficient. So it's a very streamlined operation that allows us to be with the wildlife and to be able to capture those moments.
And how long have you waited for something?
Oh, I've waited so long. I think the most challenging waiting time I've ever had was photographing the rain wolves on the coast of British Columbia, because they're so shy and they are shot at by passerby boats. And so we waited for 3 months in a blind, sitting in the intertidal zone, waiting.
So literally on a boat or on land waiting, in a stakeout waiting 3 months?
Well, we were staying on the boat. Yeah. So going back every night and sleeping on board. But every morning at 4 a.m, we would take the dinghy onto shore and sit in our blind and hope.
Wow. You got there in the end.
We got there in the end. It was challenging. And you do a lot of reading, a lot of meditating.
And what about, that's amazing, amazing patience. And what's your favorite marine creature to photograph?
Oh God, I mean, they're so amazing, all of them. I've been in the water with blue whales all the way down to plankton blooms. And I find it all fascinating because it's all interconnected. So the more we spend time in the water and with scientists, the more we understand and learn how the ocean works. And it's been fascinating to learn that big whales like sperm whales and blue whales play such an important role to be a solution for climate change. And that we need many more whales if we really want to tackle this issue, because whales feed on very mineral rich plankton and then or krill, and then they poop in the surface, and that's fertilizer for plankton. And plankton is the largest, it's like a mini rainforest, miniature creatures, and they're absorbing carbon dioxide all the time. So the whale fertilizes plankton with its poop, and that creates more food for the whale. So it's this cycle, and trying to capture that with photographs and video can be challenging and fun.
And have you ever been amazed, particularly amazed by a particular animal's behavior, or has there been a moment where you just that blew your socks off? Can you think of anything?
It happens all the time, because 80% of biodiversity on planet Earth lives in the ocean, and we know so little about it. So as you spend time in the water, you see amazing things and you see behaviors that blow your mind. I remember swimming with a matriarchal group of sperm whales. We spent the whole day with them, and they were very gentle, and they were swimming slow and taking long naps. So we were just sitting with these whales. And then, you know, I look and one of them has a piece of rope, and I come out panicked. You know, I'm like, oh my God, it's entangled. We have to help this whale. Well, it wasn't entangled. It had found a piece of rope and it was playing with it. And so it spat it out, and it just made me laugh.
And you don't get scared by the sheer size of diving with them. You don't get scared at all.
No, I do get scared, of course. Yeah, I remember a baby sperm whale. She must have been, you know, a few months old, because it didn't even have teeth. It was like a baby with no teeth. Aww. And it wanted to play, you know, so it wanted to come and feel Paul's leg with this, you know, kind of like mouthing when a baby is having the teeth come out. And Paul was laughing and he thought it was very funny, but this baby whale was still enormous, you know, it's the size of a school bus.
Yeah, exactly. Gosh. I don't think, yeah. I mean, I admire you for doing that. I don't think I could do it. I think I'd be run into the boat screaming, but.
It wouldn't be a bad way to go. You know, I'd rather die that way than, you know, on the highway.
Exactly. So you've been working as a photographer for three or so decades, and you've been traveling the globe. What changes to the ocean and climate have you witnessed in
your
time?
Yeah, you know, this is the part where you don't want to be a doomer, you know, but the ocean is very close to collapse. We have dumped so much plastic, and we have emitted so much carbon, so it's becoming an acidic ocean, and plankton cannot grow when the water becomes acidic. You know, plankton is very delicate, and acidic water, and you know, it's chemistry. The ocean water reacts to the carbon dioxide and creates an acid. So it is terrifying for me to think that, you know, glaciers melting and the large influx of fresh water from melting sea ice, all of it is changing the nature of this ecosystem. And the more we wait to make the decisions and take the actions that are absolutely necessary, the more difficult it becomes. But I'm an optimist. And a couple of years ago, I came across a scientific paper that was written by some of my favorite ocean scientists. And it had a beautiful title. It's called Rebuilding Marine Life in a Single Generation. And these scientists gave us a recipe for how we get there by 2050. And we have to do six things. And there's no choice. We have to do them all. We don't get to pick. they have to happen at the same time. We have to create more marine protected areas. At the moment, only 8% of the ocean is protected. We need to get to 30% by 2030, and that's the minimum. So national parks in the ocean, monuments, I mean, all of these protections are very important. But these protections, imagine that the national park and the ocean need to be very large. So we're thinking hundreds of thousands of square kilometers, and they have to be highly and fully protected. So no deep sea mining, no industrial fishing. We just need to let the ocean recover. We need to create protections for species like sharks and sea turtles and whales. Whales are under tremendous threat from ship strikes. You know, the more we order from Amazon, the more cargo ships are crisscrossing the planet. And whales don't know how to get out of the way. So they're getting hit by ships. And we need to figure out a way to help the shipping industry shift their lanes to protect these whales. So we're working with an organization called the Whale Guardians that is doing this. And we are their marketing agency for the whales and for the shipping lanes. Then we have to stop the flow of pollution into the ocean. So we not only have to figure out how to produce less plastic and how to reuse and recycle, we also have to figure out a way to stop that plastic from getting into the ocean. And not just plastic, all the other pollutants, sediments, fossil fuels, all of it. We also have to restore the habitats that we've already degraded. Think coral reefs, think mangroves. You know, we've already lost so many of these habitats, and there's ways to restore them, but they need an investment. We need to rethink how we extract protein from the ocean. And we need to stop industrial fishing the way it's been happening for decades and shift to land-based aquaculture. Finally, we need to stop thinking about the ocean as a victim of climate change, because it is part of the solution. So we need to recast the ocean as a huge ally in our fight against climate change.
Brilliant. And do you think these six things can be done?
They're happening as we speak. There's many organizations that are working on pieces of all those six, and Sea Legacy's job is to make sure that their stories are told, that people know where they can make investments in all six, and that together, you know, as a global community, we fight to protect our ocean.
So, Christine, what is your greatest hope for the future?
I have such faith in the ingenuity of humans, and we have turned things around several times in the history of humanity before. We need to start realizing that there's no planet B. We're not going with Elon Musk to Mars. You know, I haven't received my invitation. I'm sure you haven't.
No.
So we're staying here. And if we stop being selfish and thinking only about ourselves, and we start thinking about the future of our planet, future generations, and start making the investments that are necessary in the future of life on Earth, I think that'd be brilliant. Because at the moment, the vast majority of investments come from philanthropy, from charity. And over 70% of those come from individuals, from people who care, you know, and they send their check to these organizations. So that's brilliant. And we need to do a lot more of that.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, thank you very much, Christina. And
if I just may advocate, you know, Sea Legacy, we try to really be the good guys that help everybody, but we need help as well. So please consider supporting Sea Legacy.
And give me the website.
Yes, we are at www.sealegacy.org, and what we do is in the name.
Brilliant. Thank you for listening to this Big Boat interview. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to tune in every week for news and updates from the Boat Briefing podcast. Christina is also going to be our keynote speaker for the upcoming Ocean Talks, taking place in London on June the 8th. Check out boatinternational.com for more information. This episode was mixed and produced by Grace Nilsson and is a production by Boat International Media. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.